This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Boards of Regents. You can access our shows live or as podcasts by going on KUCI.org. This is the In the Garden Show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, and I'm Sally Richards, your host for the hour. This topic this week is going to be bonsai. And my guest this week is Katrina Jin. And so she's here, and we're actually here at the House of Bonsai. I live down in San Clemente, which a lot of you people that tune in already know that. And so I tried to find the closest one to us here in South Orange County, and I am in Lakewood, California, just sort of north of Long Beach. So, Katrina, or this is a family business, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so how did your mother, or was this your grandmother's, or how did this start?
So this has been my mother's store since day one, but three generations of women have been involved. So while my mom was styling, wiring, and trimming the bonsai trees, my grandmother would help by watering them, pulling weeds, and giving them fertilizer, and helping alongside as needed. And I, as I grew older, then I grew alongside with the bigger trees, and I learned all the stuff necessary to help the business grow as the trees grow.
So your mom really was the instigator, right?
Absolutely.
She's the one that got everything going and
Absolutely.
Got everything started. And this was really interesting because this was in a time where not a lot of women were starting businesses or were not successful at businesses. So I heard she got a little bit of a backlash from other people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So back in like the early 1990s, so the plant industry was apparently a man's game, and so when they heard that this little lone Korean lady was gonna start a bonsai tree nursery, there was a lot of naysayers saying, oh, she's not gonna last very long. But you know what, through hard work, dedication, and a passion for bonsai, my mom has now been in business for almost 30 years,
and you've got about 5 acres here.
Absolutely. It's a 5.3 acre property, so even though we're in Lakewood in Los Angeles County, we're actually right on the border of Orange County, so we have a lot of people coming in from both the LA and OC area to come
and
see us.
It was an easy drive for me. I just came up off the 405, the 605, and you're like maybe 5 miles off the 605. You're not far at all.
No, yeah, we're really close to the 605 and 91 freeway, so we're just a couple blocks away from the Cerritos Auto Square.
Yeah, and so this is a great place to come, and they have classes too, but we'll talk about that later. I really want to get into this. So, do you know where the word bonsai came from?
So bonsai is actually a Japanese term that literally translates to a planted tree in a shallow container. So the actual origins of bonsai actually started in China, where they did a style referred to as a penjing, where they actually made miniature landscapes with rocks to simulate the mountains, and they planted little trees on top of those rocks. And when the Japanese heard what the Chinese are doing, they were thinking, well, we don't really care about the rocks, but we do love the concept of a miniaturized tree that's something that they could find out in nature. So when everybody thinks of bonsai, they think everything is just, solely Japanese. But actually nowadays, it's kind of like a catch-all term for a miniaturized, artistically beautified trees. So you're trying to get a piece of nature on a small scale just for yourself.
Yeah, and I did a lot of research on this and found that there, different cultures have different ideas
sure.
on what they want to do. And it's called bonsai and not bonsai. Am I saying it right?
So yeah, it is pronounced a bonsai, but a lot of people will say bonsai. Everyone thinks, bonsai, it's like, oh, it's a Japanese thing. You gotta have all these Japanese terms. You gotta, give it the right names. But you know what? Nowadays, bonsai is a global hobby. Everybody loves nature. Nowadays, too, with urban cities, gentrifying everything. Everyone's living in small apartments, small townhomes. Nobody really has yards anymore. So they want to bring in that little piece of outside nature indoors, so that way they could feel a sense of peace and kind of escape from the urban jungle.
And it really does. I mean, when you start doing it, it's not just buying a bonsai and shaping it. There is a lot more to it. It's a commitment that you're making when you buy a bonsai. So how do people get started? What kind of tools do you need to get started?
So the three most basic tools you need are going to be a sharp pair of fine pointed scissors. That way you're able to do the little minute detail cuts in between the branches. Having a branch cutter is also ideal for working with the medium to larger branch. That way you get a clean cut, and it's going to decrease the likelihood you're going to get scars on the tree. And also getting a pair of gin pliers, which are specially designed blunted end pliers. It's going to help you get that nice tight coil around the branches up close to the tree and the branch bark without marring it. That way you're able to change the shape of the tree to beautify it more.
Yeah, and we're going to get into some of that too in the shaping. But when you're going to buy a bonsai, you can definitely buy it here, and there are other places I know north and northwest of LA, more than there is way down in South Orange County.
Sure.
But what do we consider when you're looking for a plant that you want to do a bonsai?
So in bonsai, you could technically use any kind of tree as a bonsai, but the ideal types that you want to use are trees that have a small leaf, small branches. That way, when you shrink down the overall size of the tree, the scale still looks appropriate when you're able to look at the tree from a distance. Like, oh, this is something that I could definitely see, like, out growing in the mountains or in the wild.
As I was here this morning, I was talking to some people that were taking the class, and you have classes twice a month, right?
Correct. So we have them every first and third Saturday of each month, all year round, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And they had, you had an instructor here, but basically everybody was working with their own tree. And
Absolutely.
He was coming around and looking and helping that person at whatever stage he was at. And
sure.
I talked to some of the other people who have been coming, and some of them had actually joined bonsai clubs, and they took classes, but they learn a lot more here. And there is a lot more to learn than what I initially thought before I started coming in here. One of the things that we do need to consider is when we're going to buy a tree, and you don't have to buy one already shaped, you can actually start with something larger and trim it down. There's a lot of techniques to do that. But you have to decide if you want to have this inside your house or you want to have it outside your house. So what's the difference between the two places?
Ideally, you'd want to keep bonsai in an outdoor setting, but depending on what kind of tree you have, you are able to keep it indoors. So in general, a good rule of thumb is by looking at the foliage of the tree to figure out its lighting requirements. If it has a small, compact, bushy, thorny type, or more like a needle-like foliage, then it's best to keep in more light. So if you want to keep that indoors, either keep it by a sunny windowsill or a brightly lit room. Also, if you're interested in getting a bonsai with more broader leaf, more of a wider shape, a round leaf, possibly with some flowers, a little bit of ornamental fruit on there, they're going to prefer a little bit more shade. So definitely those are better suited for indoors, but even if you want to keep those outdoors, we recommend that you have some sort of shade for it, either with a large yard tree, a dark side of the house, or a covered patio or balcony.
Yeah, because they definitely are more susceptible to drying out, and and so if you're in the shade, you have a little better chance of not having the burn if you're not watering them as often as you're supposed to be doing that, which is almost every day, and sometimes more than that, depending on how hot it is outside.
Actually, yeah. So during the hot weather, you do have to definitely keep an eye on the watering of it. The ideal is that you don't want the bonsai to be soaking wet nor bone dry. You would try to keep it a little bit wet all the time. That way it always has that residual moisture to keep it healthy. But what we recommend is that you take your fingers tip and you poke in about like a half inch into the soil. If you still feel a little bit of wetness, then it's probably good for the rest of the day. Check on it next day. If you can't feel anything, with your that finger test, then go ahead and water it. So when you do water bonsai, you want to make sure that you water it deeply. Now, what I mean by that is you want to soak the entire root ball from top to bottom. So the way that we do it here at House of Bonsai is we do it in layers. So what I mean by that is we'll pour a circle of water using a fine hole hose attachment to have like a rain-like watering effect. Well, we'll do a circle around the trunk, give it a few minutes, let that water drop down, and then we'll get back to it, add on another water circle around the trunk, let that drop down. So we'll do that about 2 to 3 times. That way we ensure it's the water has penetrated the entire root ball. We have excess water coming out the drainage holes. That way we know, hey, that tree is okay.
And we're going to go a little bit later in here and talk about the soil and the what type of things that you have around the roots, because it's completely different than putting this in the ground. And so that's why you want to, and we'll talk about that more in detail on how to keep everything wet, because it's not like, you know, it's going to get muddy in there with dirt, a lot of clay or something else that you might have in your normal soil. So as I was looking through your nursery here, I was also seeing that you have a lot of, you can actually bonsai fruit trees, and I saw a pepper plant out there that looked really cool. That was had little peppers on the top, and we talked about that because that was about 3 feet high. And I said, "Well, how are you going to do a bonsai with that?" But we can cut that back, and so if you have a bigger plant, then you can actually make it into a bonsai.
Absolutely. So for those that are interested in getting a bit of a shortcut onto getting a more aged-looking bonsai, usually they start with a bigger stock tree, and they'll cut the top of it down. That way, the overall scale and size of the tree has shrunk down. But when you look at the trunk and the root base, it's much larger than the overall size of the tree would make it seem. So it gives that aged perspective that you're looking for.
Well, not only that, it's also going to give you a lot of root and growth energy there in that trunk of that tree.
Right, because when we cut off the excess roots on the top, then we're channeling all of that extra growth hormone and nutrients to sink down to the bottom of the tree, so that way you're able to get a thicker base on it. So in bonsai, we're always trying to go after having a better nibari, or the root base, where you have a nice wide flared skirt effect. So that is the creme de la creme of bonsai.
That's great. So as we were talking about it, I did a little checking up on YouTube and was looking on how to pot bonsai. And so while I'm here, I'm seeing a lot. Most of the trays in here, or the pots, are, and they're all different sizes. I mean, there's like teacup to a couple of feet wide, and even larger.
Sure.
So how do I pick a pot? Say I want to have something, I just want to put it teacup size on my table. I don't want it to get any bigger. Mm-hmm. So what do I look for?
So in general, for smaller size bonsai that are about like 1 to 2 outstretched hand sizes, you're looking for a pot that's about like half the size of the tree. Now, when you're working with trees that are on the bigger scale, where they're about the size of your torso, then you're looking for a pot that's about a third to like 40% of the size of the tree. Now, a common misconception with bonsai is that people can just immediately repot their trees into a shallow tray to get, you know, the picture book look out of it. So actually that's a bad idea from the beginning. What you really need to do is actually utilize a bonsai training pots, or at least intermediary pots, where you're going to gradually shrink the root base over many years using different size pots, where you're going to have, like, let's say you're working with a stock nursery tree, like in one of our like 1 or 2 gallon sizes, where you're going to have like a foot tall pot. So then if you wanted to repot it, then you'd want to move it to something that's about like half the height of that nursery stock pot, and then from then on, then you just shrink down a couple inches of the height each time until you're satisfied with the the depth of the tree that you like.
But when you're doing that, you're actually cutting off some of the roots, correct? So when you take it out of that 1 gallon pot, mm-hmm. you're going back down to the roots. You're taking all that dirt off, correct? And then trimming that down?
So we're trimming off some of the bottom of the root ball, but the roots that we don't want are the long, thicker, angering roots. Because in bonsai, we're only interested in the small, fine, hair-like feeder roots. So to have that nice, shallow pot effect, every time that we transplant it to that wider pot, then we're going to actually open up the root ball just a little bit to just keep spreading the roots out to the side. And let's say, for example, you're happy with the tree size and you're happy with the pot and you're just changing the soil, which you should regularly do about every 2 to 4 years, depending on the age and the size of the tree. Yeah, you should be trimming off the excess roots just a little bit. That way you're encouraging more growth out of the tree. Because every time that you cut off a little bit of the outside root ball, then that invigorates the tree. Like, hey, I better do something about this. And it's going to send out new growth hormone to restabilize itself. So that's going to really help with the fine branch ramifications, so you're able to get a nice thick mass of fine detailed branches in your bonsai, whether you're doing different cloud-like pads or maybe you're going for a more full broom or brush style tree.
So one of the things I noticed on the bonsai pots are they usually have very large holes in the bottom.
Yes,
which
do.
Is not your normal when you buy a regular flower pot. And mm-hmm. So what's the reason for that?
So the reason why we have those big, large draining holes in the pots is because when they make the bonsai pots, if they create a bunch of little smaller holes like they do in a contemporary like plastic plant pot, then it can crack the clay. So by using like one or two big drainage holes to compensate for that issue, what we do in bonsai is just get a plastic little drain mesh screen. So we'll just cut little squares out. We'll make sure that it has an extra overlap around, and we'll actually wire bind it to the pot. That way those little screen mesh squares don't move about. So that's going to help ensure that the soil is going to stay inside the pot every time that you water. So only the water drains out through those drainage
holes. And those are nice big holes so that the water can drain out. So
correct.
It's not just going to be sitting in water,
right.
Which we don't want to have.
No, because you do want to make sure that, you water it deeply, but also that the extra water runs out. That way you don't risk the chance of drowning your roots and causing root rot to happen, because that will kill a bonsai tree with very quickly.
Yeah. And so that's when we were talking about people who just buy a bonsai and then bring it back 2 or 3 weeks later and
sure.
It's dead. It's because you have to water it. It's like almost a daily deal. So this is something that you're going to make a commitment to growing. This isn't something you just put in your garden and then water once a week. And what really makes it that way is really the soil that it's in, because it's not the typical soil. So you want to talk about what type of things do we make, and you guys mix up your own, which is perfect. There are certain components that you want to have in
sure.
your soil. So we definitely want to have something that's going to hold the water.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have something that's going to release the water and leave oxygen, because our roots need to have oxygen to
absolutely.
Grow. And we need to have some type of something that will hold a little bit of the more of the space, like a peat moss
sure,
type of
sure.
thing. So what types of things do you have in your mix? I mean, what is in that mix that makes it good for bonsai?
Well, before I get to that point, so I just want to go over that the three main components of having a good bonsai soil is having a good balance between water retention, drainage, and soil aeration. So for our ready-made mixes, we have a good balance between organic and inorganic soil medium. So what I mean by that is for the organic stuff, we're talking like a peat moss, a little bit of tree bark, maybe just a tiny bit of a potting soil to hold on to some moisture. While the inorganic ingredients, usually it's some type of crushed rock, or like a pumice, like a porous rock, or even the ever famous Akadama clay ball soil that is imported from Japan. So the whole reason why Akadama is so revered is because it's that perfect ratio between that organic and inorganic, where you get like the best of that three major components I was talking about: the water retention, water drainage, and soil aeration. The thing about it, though, is because it's imported in from Japan, only they're able to make it because of the active volcanoes they have over there.
That's a soil that's very, very easy to get there. I mean, you have a lot of it in Japan, where
Absolutely.
We don't have it here.
No, we don't have. Yeah, we don't have too many volcanoes in the continental U.S. here, unfortunately. But The key thing about Akadama, though, is that after a few years of use, usually within like the second to third year, you are going to notice that the clay balls are going to break down and it's going to turn into a mud brick, essentially, inside your pots. So you definitely want to make sure to check on that soil to see if the components have broken down. At that point, if you notice that you're seeing a lot of fine dust and not that many the ball granules anymore, then you know, okay, I got to change the soil or repot this tree entirely. So it's a very good, easy to check, because if you don't see any the granules or balls, then you know, okay, I gotta take action.
And another thing about that too is I was talking to one of the other people here that was working on theirs, and he said when I water it, I can see the clay ball turn dark brown.
Oh yeah.
And I know it's absorbed the water.
Absolutely.
And that's a kind of a key for him. He goes, if it's light brown, then I know it needs
it's
to be
dry.
Watered.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, if it's Akadama, it has a nice light brown, like golden, almost kind of like a coffee with a lot of creamer color to it. when it's wet from watering, then it turns into more of like a Americano coffee
in coffee terms. Oh, that's great. So it really actually you can see when you're putting your water in there, and you can see the soil change.
Sure,
and
sure.
I could see the little round ball of the Akadama that was on there. And that's not something that you typically find in most nurseries either.
No, because you get mostly the bonsai specialty vendors, such as ourselves here at House of Bonsai, are going to be the ones that carry it.
Yep. So now that we've decided, we picked a tree that we liked, mm-hmm. we've cut down the top of it. This is a one that, say, is not a bonsai right now. This is one I'm going to try to do. And now I've cut it, and it was in a 1-quart pot, and it's been 2 years now, and I've cut down the amount of roots that are in the thing, and now I finally got it into my pot with the correct soil that's on there, mm-hmm. and now I know that I have to water it all the way around, and that's why, because the water pretty much goes through it very quickly, mm-hmm. and so you want to make sure that you totally get the whole thing wet when you're watering, and that's why you're doing it three times, right?
Right, because we're just making sure that entire root ball is soaked through, because a lot of problems with first-time bonsai growers is that they don't water it deeply enough, so they'll just only water just the surface roots. So sure, the surface roots are okay, and it seems like, oh, everything's fine, you know, I put my finger in, it seems like everything's okay, but if it doesn't go deep into the heart of that root ball, eventually you'll notice that it's gonna start drying out from the ends, and you'll see the browning and the yellowing just swoop in from to the heart of the
and you're
tree.
Really trying to encourage those feeder roots, right?
Absolutely.
And deep. So yeah. If you're just watering the top, you got the little feeder roots on the top, but what about the ones below? Those have to pick up nutrients too.
Absolutely. So in bonsai, the bonsai person's best friend is using beneficial plant probiotics. So the favored one is mycorrhizae.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using a traditional bonsai fertilizer, which are the rapeseed cakes,
mm-hmm.
so they look like little donuts, balls,
uh-huh.
things.
Yeah.
And if you place a few of them around the edge of the bonsai tree, after several days of watering, you're notice that a silvery grayish fungus develops on top of those rapeseed cakes. But that's actually not a bad thing. That's
no.
actually the beneficial fungus.
It's a micronutrient.
Absolutely. So yeah, the mycorrhizae is going to sink down into the soil, and it's going to work with the nutrients that are already in the soil, as well as, you know, taking a little bit of the water to keep up that root production.
Yeah, and it's actually feeds those roots. It helps it make them easier to incorporate all the nutrients
Absolutely.
That are around in there.
Of course.
And while we're talking about that, do we have different kind of fertilizers that you use?
Absolutely. So in general, we're trying to use an organic, slow-released formulation. So there's a bit of a conflicting war going on regarding how to fertilize a bonsai. So there's some people that say that, oh, you should only really be giving the fertilizer during the growing season. So like during the springtime, you'd want to use more of a high nitrogen mix where the NPK is 10-6-6, a little bit more of a balanced mix in the summertime, so like 6-6-6 NPK, and then during the autumn time, then you'd want a little bit of a lower nitrogen content where the NPK is 3-6-6, and just skip in the winter since it's going to be dormant.
Right.
But there's actually a lot of experts, which we're on this side of the camp, where we figure it's better just to use a balanced formulation all throughout the year,
mm-hmm.
but just tone it down as it gradually closer to the colder months.
To like dilute it or something.
Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, just like a tapered off where you give more during the spring and summer, and when it comes to like autumn and winter, then you just slow down on giving.
And that would be like if he was outside. This is the sun isn't out as long.
Sure.
It's a shorter day, and mm-hmm. so it's got to go dormant and leave and let it
rest.
Yes, get all
Absolutely.
The nutrients back and get back together. Okay, we're going to take a break right now. I just want to remind everyone, you're listening to In the Garden, and this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. And we are talking today with Katrina Jin, the House of Bonsai in Lakewood. This has been a really great experience. I was able to walk all through the 5 acres that they have here and saw, you know, the small, medium, and large, the ones that have been growing for over 100 years, some grapevines out there that were just huge, gnarly kind of roots. They looked really cool. And then there's some really small ones here. There's in these little cups and they look so small. And so there really is bonsai for anyone. And so we've been talking about how to get started in it. And we were just talking about fertilizers. I just want to talk a little more about it because we're working with not a normal soil. This is a soil that actually as the nutrients come through, they're going to go through very quickly, and you're going to water this, and they're going to pick the little feeder roots up are going to pick them up more quickly than, say, an older root would do. And so that's why the fertilizing is very important, but you don't want to overdo it. You can burn roots if you
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why we favor that organic, slow-release formulation. So in general, the physical ones where it's either in that traditional rapeseed cake or a pellet is the preferred way. But you can even, you know, use the liquid or like a small powder or like a small size of granule fertilizers as well. You just got to make sure that you read the manufacturer's label properly, that you're dosing it out. And especially with liquid fertilizers, a little less is better because you'd mm-hmm. rather not risk the chance of burning the roots, because liquid fertilizers will dump all of the nutrients right then and there.
Yep. Yep. And also, but there are different kinds. There are systemic
Sure.
fertilizers, and then
Absolutely.
There are just the regular. So what's, just for people that don't know, what would be the difference between a systemic and a regular just one?
So with the systemic one, so that's going to be more of like that slow release where it's a gradual feeding throughout the weeks and months upon the initial application. With most conventional fertilizers, it would just be like they would just dump all the nutrients right then and there within like that first day. Maybe you'll still see it active for like about a week after the application. But because bonsai is more of a hobby geared towards patients, we'd rather use more of a systemic or like a long-term fertilizer formula where we know that it's going to be supported throughout the entire year and many future years to come.
So do you have, we didn't talk about this either, and I just was thinking about this, that obviously it's a tree, and
yes,
it can get damaged with insects and other things. What do you do about insects when you get any type of damage or you see them on your tree?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. With any kind of plant, it's definitely alarming to see any sort of pest attacking your tree, especially with bonsai, because a lot of people, they like to think that it's a part of their family. A lot of people I know that come to us, they actually have it as a living heirloom, where their grandparents or their grandparents started this tree, and it's being passed down to the generations. But the number one most common pest to attack bonsai are gonna be spider mites. So they're literally little itty bitty tiny thing. When they're young, they're the size of dust particles. So anytime that there's wind or a breeze coming through, assume that at some point in the year, spider mites are gonna be riding that gust. So ideal treatment is to apply a special miticide that's specifically designed to deal with them. And another great thing to do is apply a fungicide on there at least once a year to as a routine maintenance to make sure that your tree is healthy all around.
We were talking about the time of the year to fertilize, and spring is always a good time because it's like the rebirth. That's the time when they're starting to really grow. So when you're putting something in for insects and stuff, do you use a systemic or do you use some like a spray for insects?
Most of the time we want to go with a more gentle formulation, so we just go with the spray just for the top portions of the tree. So ideally we'll take like a plastic bag or like a kitchen bag or something where we cut it open, make a plastic sheet, we'll cover up the base of the trunk and the roots in the soil, that we know that the pest chemical is only gonna go to the parts of the tree that we want it to. Because a lot of those formulations, whether it's organic or not, if it drops into the soil, then it actually will affect the beneficial, you know, the plant probiotics and fungus that you're wanting to stay alive and help your tree out.
Yeah.
So with a lot of the systemic ones, those are the ones that are going deep into the roots. That is reserved for really bad root rot situations or cases where the tree has faced a lot of neglect, where it's been sitting in the same soil for like a decade, where it was abandoned in some corner of the yard and everybody forgot about that tree. So always gentle is better and a little less is more.
And you also have a hospital here, which was
we definitely have a bonsai hospital service going on here. So my mom, Victoria Lee, is considered to be the bonsai doctor for the Los Angeles County and Orange County area. So I definitely like to tell people, hey, you know, if you have no idea what's going on with your bonsai tree, you think something weird is happening, it's feeling under the weather, either take pictures, email it to us at houseofbonsai@gmail.com, or even better is to just bring your tree to us here at our nursery so we can actually take a look at the tree in person, check the soil, check the roots, and we can let you know what's going on with the tree. If for whatever reason, if you're either too busy or you're too shy to understand, you know, what you need to do to save that tree, then you're more than welcome to check in your tree with us and we will attempt to revive it for you for a small fee. But not only that, we also offer a bonsai hotel service for those that are worried about keeping, you know, their bonsai tree, who's a beloved family member, because of the amount of care and attention that they need. If they're going to go on a business trip for, say, more than a week, then they can check in their tree. We will watch it for you.
And you have one here.
Actually, we have a few.
Yeah, you do. And so tell us a little bit about that one. That one, how old is that one?
Oh, gosh. The big one that we have that you're thinking about, Sally, is actually, I think it's close to like 200 years old. It's a very old Postrata juniper. I mean, it's as tall as a person, where it has a magnificent large gin and shari deadwood striping all throughout the top and bottom of the tree. I mean, it's a very, you know, stand out tree.
And that was a family. I mean, been in their family. How long?
I believe the customer has had it now for 4 generations. So the customer told me, too, before they went on their long trip overseas, that if something happens to that tree, then their whole family will be out to get him for letting that family heirloom tree die. It's like, how could you do that to your great-grandfather's tree? Do you know how many years went into taking care of that tree? You're supposed to keep it alive so the kids can have it and their kids can have it and so on and so forth.
Yes, and it is a big tree. I mean, you
Absolutely.
Can tell it's been, but holy cripe, being around that long, that is a really long time. But then there was another lady who came in, and she had, hers was at the hospital also, and hers was leaning against a rock.
Yes.
So what happened to hers?
So it was unfortunately a bit of a neglected tree where they kept a more sun-loving tree in a little bit too much shade. And so because the tree was leaning on the rock, and it was there was too much branch growth on one side, so the tree got so used to leaning on that rock, and so one side is heavy, so it was just kind of like teetering over a little bit. So one half of the root ball got overstressed, so it actually started dying off to the point where when my mom changed the soil, she saw that one whole side's roots was just gone. It wasn't even there. So right now it's in the so-called bonsai ICU. And we're giving it another week to give it more plant vitamins, a little bit more rooting hormone to hopefully take it out of its plant coma.
Yep, and she took the rock out, she said, too. And so by doing that, she exposed the roots more now, and now she's able to put that rooting hormone, better soil in there, so that those feeder roots are going to start to grow in that area to make it more balanced.
Right, right. Especially with the introduction of the new soil, it's got the fresh inorganic components, too, where it's got the little like micro pockets where little fine feeder roots can develop and hold on to the little rock particles, so that because with neglected trees where it's just been sitting there for too long in the same, so what happens is that the soil will break down, and so instead of having little granules, it'll actually turn more into like a brick inside the pot, and so there's not enough fine little spaces and pores for those roots to kind of meander and crawl around into for more growth. And also, when there's not enough of those little pores, then the roots can't breathe. And so if there's, like I said earlier in our program, where we're talking about the three major components of the soil, so that's going to be the water retention, water drainage, and soil aeration. So when we reintroduced fresh soil to it, then it's giving that tree, you know, like an oxygen test.
Yeah, a big breath of fresh air.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and surprisingly, a lot of people don't realize that roots do need oxygen. They have to have that there. So when you don't want to have a real muddy place for things to grow, even though you think, well, I have to give them a lot of water, but they do need to have that space in there.
Absolutely.
So what would be some of the stuff that you would look for to kind of see if it's a sick plant or not? You know, we could see maybe the tips are starting to dry out, and maybe I need to give it more water. And then you start giving it more water, and maybe it comes back, but maybe it doesn't. So what else would be a sign of that maybe something's not right with your plant?
So actually it's funny that you mentioned the, you know, it's too dry and then I'm, you know, water it a lot. So when a bonsai tree gets stressed out due to a lack of water, and then you start heavily watering the tree, then you're going from, you know, dehydrating a tree to all of a sudden drowning the tree. So the tree's not even quite sure what the heck is happening. It's like, you know, the tree was stranded in the desert. All of a sudden, it just got picked up and dropped in the ocean. So at that point, the tree's just like, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And so it'll die back even quicker. So what ends up happening is that you'll actually start seeing the leaves and the branches from the right up against the trunk of the tree start drying out and falling off, rather than the outside death going fanning into it. So you're going to see like the whole tree just all of a sudden it just drops off. So at that point, what we need to do is actually strip off all of the stressed out foliage, because if the water dries out in all of the leaf cells, then it's no good. It's basically
gone
at that point. So it's just better just to take it all off. It's a good idea to give some rooting hormones, so some kind of a plant vitamin to increase the vigor in it, and just give it time for the new fresh leaves to grow back in.
So would that be a good time to change the soil out too, or not?
It honestly depends on a case-by-case basis. If the repotting has been done fairly recently, like within a last year or two, then we would just use the same soil. But most of the time in those cases, it's an old soil which has compacted too much into a brick inside that pot. So we'll just dig it out and make sure to give it new soil. So that way it has an easier chance of coming back.
Mm-hmm.
A really great plant vitamin that we use all the time here is Super Thrive. So old gold standard that all the gardeners and plant lovers everywhere enjoy. So we always bring in fresh bottles from the manufacturer, and that's our go-to for stressed out trees.
Oh, no kidding! Oh, there's always those little secrets.
Absolutely.
Well, especially if you needed to have it to come back. And
sure.
There was a lady here who'd had one, and half her tree was brown and half her tree was green. And so she was working on that. And she's going, oh, I hate to cut off all these brown little areas. And I said, but that's going to encourage new growth. That's
Right. Because if the old, half dried out to dying leaves are still stuck onto the tree, then the tree's just going to struggle to keep sending nutrients where it's not going to be effectively used. Because again, once that the plant cell membrane dries out, then you can't rehydrate. It's just gone. Mm-hmm. I know it's a bit unsightly looking to look at a bare tree for, several weeks to a few months, but really though, if you give it time and you give the plant stuff like Super Thrive to help along its recovery process, it'll grow back. And even for bonsai people that are afraid to cut because they're worried, I'm going to be marring, the look of the tree. If you're afraid to cut, you're not going to get very far in bonsai. You got to make that executive decision to dictate what do you want the tree to look like. What is your personal style of beauty? Because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So here at our 5.3 acre nursery, we have, as you've seen, we have thousands of trees of all different shapes and sizes. One person might look at a tree and think, that's just a, whatever, okay tree. But another person might think, oh, this is the most gorgeous thing ever. This is me. This compels me and it speaks to me. And so you got to make sure that your tree suits your tastes.
Well, and I was talking to one of the other guys, and he had a tree that was kind of like a deciduous tree and had the flat leaves and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And he said he's looking at his tree as a little boy, and this is his climbing tree. And so he's going to shape this so he can go up there and build a tree house when it gets bigger. And so he's looking at that as his personal little tree house tree. That's what he's shaping it into.
Absolutely.
And I've seen some here where they're actually going off the side and down the table. There are a bunch of classic designs for bonsai, and you can find those on the internet.
Absolutely.
All different shapes, and then they have competitions and
there's a lot of active bonsai clubs in and around the Orange County area. So, and for those that are interested in bonsai, I definitely recommend checking them out. Go online, just type in like bonsai club near your zip code.
Well,
and they
you even have a link.
Absolutely. So we do on our website at www.houseofbonsai.com. In our about us section, if you use the drop down menu, you'll see a bonsai directory where we have all of the California bonsai clubs.
And you can find one near you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the closest one to me, and I'm in San Clemente, looks like it's in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. And, that's Anaheim Bonsai Club. And I was talking to, someone here who was working on their, stuff. And I asked them, do you belong to any clubs? And yes, there are a lot of other ones around too. And they offer classes also. He says, I did the YouTube thing.
Sure.
I started doing it. And he says, but when I joined the club, I learned.
It's a world of difference.
Oh my gosh. He says, I didn't realize. He says, I was just floating along doing okay. But when I took those classes, I really mm-hmm. learned a lot. And he said, and even coming here, and he comes here like twice a month.
Sure.
And he can get that good information that he needs, because I was just walking around looking and talking to people, and they're deciding, you know, which one of these tree branch, which is about a quarter inch long, should I cut off?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to affect what's going to happen with that bonsai tree as it grows.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And do I want it to be, you know, kind of fluffy like a cloud, or do I want it to stick out straight, or in the long term, what do I want it to do? And so they're making very small little cuts all over.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was one technique. The other one we didn't get into was wiring. And
yes.
So one of the things I saw when I was looking up and how to keep your root ball in uh-huh. your pot, and they recommended to wire. So they were wiring from the outside and then wiring around the root on the inside of your pot to keep that root ball down. Now, not every one was done that way.
Sure,
but
sure.
Maybe some of the bigger ones.
Usually, just to clarify how the wire is wrapped around the root ball for those bigger trees, with the larger clay bonsai pots, remember how we were talking about those big drainage holes?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're going to get a big length of wire, and you're going to put, you know, one end in one hole and the other in the other hole, and you're going to make like a U shape where the bottom part of the U is going to be underneath
on the outside
of the pot, and then you're just going to make sure that those little plastic mesh drainage screens are covering up that hole. And then you place the bonsai tree with the root ball in the center, and you're going to use like that long length of wire on each side, and you're basically going to be tying that root ball to the tree. Now, the reason why we do that is just so we're encouraging the tree to be happy in that pot by letting it know, hey, you're going to be stable in this pot. You're not going to be shaking around in the wind. We promise. You're safe, you're secure, you're
Nobody's going to knock it over by mistake.
Yeah, even if the winds come, you're going to be, strong. You're not going to bow your head to the harsh weather. So, you're strong. And the tree's like, oh, I'm strong. This is great. I'm going to live.
And they give me all this food? Boy, life couldn't be better, right?
Right. And then, when you take care of a bonsai, like, it really is like a person. You take care of a person or, a beloved pet, they will react back, very strongly. If they appreciate the care and attention, they will definitely let you know.
Oh, wow. And then I also saw people were trying to make things, bend their branches, and they were using wire.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably don't do that the first year, right? Or do you? I mean, when you start out.
I mean, it really depends on the type of a shape and style that you're going for. If you're looking for something a little bit more raw and wild looking, then you don't necessarily have to do the wire training
mm-hmm.
from the baby tree stage. If you wanted to let it get big and have more of a developed trunk on it, and then just work on the primary to secondary branches at that point, then you can go ahead and do that. But some people, they liked the meticulous detail and the control to guide the destiny of that tree from, its young days, so they will go ahead and wire the trunk into a nice curve shape, or maybe they'll do like a leaning or slanting style. Also some more uncommon varieties too is where they take a big long tree where it has like a really long trunk on it, and they'll actually cut off like one whole side of the branches off, and that what they'll do is actually they'll lean that tree trunk down and they'll use like that one uncut side and make it like a mock forest of trees off of one trunk.
So those would have been the branches coming out of that trunk, right?
Right.
And then they go straight up.
Exactly. So it looks like you have this just lovely arch trunk, and then all the little branches that are growing off of it are now, quote unquote, their own trees. So, you know, with some people too, they get very uptight about the bonsai style. Like, oh, like I have to, you know, fit through the classical styles. If it doesn't look like something in the book, or, you know, then I'm doing it wrong. No, there's no, you know, there's really no, you know, such thing as bad or wrong art. It's just whatever you feel is an expression of you and you're happy with it and you think it's beautiful, then go for it. I mean, you're the rule of thumb I tell people is don't try too hard to copy what someone else is doing. Use what the other bonsai trees look like as an inspiration for what you want to do.
It's your tree.
It's
you're
going to
be spending time. You better like it because it's yours and you're going to be with it. One of the things that when I came in, somebody was buying some of that wire and it comes in different thicknesses.
Absolutely.
So which thickness should go with what? Is there a rule of thumb on what size?
Yeah, there definitely is a rule of thumb. So in general, we only sell the aluminum wires here. So with that, you want to get a wire thickness that's roughly about a third to a quarter of the diameter of the branch and or trunk that you're working with. So obviously for little branches, they get the real itty bitty, you know, skinny wires. So we have 1 millimeter is our thinnest wire, and we have every half increment. So we have like 1 millimeter, 1.5 millimeter, 2 millimeter, so on and so forth, up to 6 millimeter. And that's for like the really big branches. But even if you're working with trees that have even bigger, thicker branches, or maybe you're trying to bend an old trunk on it, it can be done, albeit you just have to be a lot more patient with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're willing to, you know, work with it and be there to guide it along, pretty much anything is possible in bonsai.
Oh, yeah. And so I was watching somebody wire up their branches and getting them to go. And once you get that wire on, you really can manipulate those to get it to go into whatever position.
Absolutely.
So how long do you keep those on? Do they?
It's only for several months, so depending on the size of the branch, it can range from about maybe 4 up to like 10 months. Now you want to keep that training wire on the branches. So when you initially wrap the wire around the branches, you want to do it in like a 45 degree angle, where you want to give it a little bit of spacing in between each loop. So you don't want to do it too tight where it looks like a telephone
spring or something, right?
Like not like a spring or like an old you know, telephone cord.
Uh-huh.
And you don't want to do it so wide that the tree branch is not manipulable, where you saw how people were able to kind of bend that branch into the way, and it would actually held that position.
Yes.
once they let it go. So in general, for the smaller branches, if you look at your pinky nail and you look at the width of it, that's roughly about the gapping you want to give in between each 45 degree angle loop that you go around the branches.
Well, that's a good rule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's easy to do. Well, are there any other tips you can give us? Because we're almost running out of time. Anything else you can think that maybe we didn't cover?
So with bonsai, I think it's a good idea to definitely do a lot of research. There's a lot of free information available on YouTube and, you know, in library books. Library books are definitely where it's at if you want to see the more classical stuff and have some like a written guideline, because a lot of those old bonsai books, they have like the specific ratios for different plant species. And, you know, if you have this bonsai, then you got to do exactly this. But if you really have a passion and want to jump into doing bonsai, it's better to take an in-live class. That way you could, you know, work with the tree with your hand, and you have a bonsai instructor next to you to let you know the different options you have to beautify your tree and take it to the next level.
Yeah, so, because this is really a commitment plant. This is not just a petunia that you're going to put in the yard and then next year it won't be here. This is something that's going to be with you for a long time, and I think a lot of people who buy them don't realize that when they're buying their first bonsai and realizing after they have it that they didn't know how to take care of it.
Sure,
and
sure.
I know there's a lot of information out there, and it looks like the bonsai clubs around here are also another good source.
Absolutely.
You guys twice a month have the classes here,
sure.
And this is terrific. So I want to thank you for taking all this time and going over that. We went pretty thoroughly into this and I found out a whole lot. So thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last takeaway that I just want to let the listeners know about is if you're going to get a bonsai tree that's not from us, make sure that you're getting a tree that doesn't have a bunch of the rocks or gravel glued on top.
No
mistake that people make on purchasing a bonsai, where they assume that, well, you know, if the rocks and stuff, they're glued on top, maybe that's how it should be. The reason why they do that is just for show. Like, they only want to do that so when they have it at the store or have it in a mall kiosk or at a swap meet or something, it keeps the whole display clean because there's not going to be any soil spilling over. If you're going to be taking those plants, make sure to break that glue layer. You can't water a tree if glue is just going to be, you know, washing all of, or like pushing out all of the water, so it's just spilling over the side and never gets to the roots.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard of that. Oh my gosh. Well, that's really good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.